thinking that Mr. Davison's confidence in us was too overweening to be anything but embarrassing, even though our vanity was flattered by having the sole onus of responsibility for the recovery of stolen goods fixed upon us. The facts are briefly as follows. Mr. Davison drove a very peculiar trade. In society, he figured as a man of culture and of large independent means. He lived in one of the most costly of the many palatial flats in which opulent London loves to disport itself, and dispensed his hospitality on a very lavish and comprehensive scale. Assisted by his wife, a woman who was very beautiful and as clever as himself, he gave receptions to which the titled and untitled flower of English aristocracy thought itself fortunate to be invited, and spent vast sums in apparently ostentatious extravagance. But this extravagance was really the medium by which he found opportunities of gauging and of trading upon the social and financial position of his hosts of acquaintances, who never dreamed that the wherewithal of the splendid hospitality at which they wondered was derived from their own needs. Mr. Davison was really a money lender on a huge scale, and had at least half a dozen flourishing West End establishments. At one of them, he traded under a fictitious name as a dealer in gold and silver plate, and at another, under another alias, he made costly jewelry his principal line. From still another establishment, he drew plethoric profits by lending large sums of money on valuables. At another, he advanced money on real estate at huge interest, and at one or two others, he drove an equally lucrative trade on somewhat different lines. But at none of his shops did he ever put in a personal appearance, though he was actually the guiding spirit of them all. He had one little room in his flat to which no one was ever allowed to penetrate except himself and his wife. Connecting this room with his various establishments was an elaborate system of telephoning, and from this so-called study, he was able to direct the multifarious threads of his vast business. Add to his acquisitive capacity the fact that he had the power of winning the confidence of others to an extraordinary degree, and it will be seen how much more easy it was for him to manage so complicated a business than for a man with less tact and polish, or for a man whose wife was inferior to Mrs. Davison, who was her husband's very double in cunning and suavity. And then they both had such a clever way of advising their friends out of their difficulties that success was a foregone conclusion with them. "Do you know, Lady C?" would be Mrs. Davison's advice to a bosom friend whose present condition was that of chronic impecuniosity, but whose future was assured wealth. "If I were you, I would do just what dear Gerald and I had to do a year or two ago, when we were at our wits' end for money, owing to a temporary depreciation of land values. We knew that all would come right in time, and we bought a couple of £1,000 worth of jewelry from Edison and Company, and £1,000 worth of gold and silver plate from Meeson's."
"But how could it help you to go several £1,000 deeper into debt?"
"My dear Lady C, how unsophisticated you are. We pawned the things for £1,000 at Grinling's. It's a capital place for business of that sort. No questions asked, and no fear of things being lent on hire, as sometimes happens. You see, we got all that ready money without laying any out, and paid all up as soon as we were better off."
The result of some such talk would be that Lady C and her kindred spirits would do a rather tall business with Edison, Meeson, and Grinling, unconscious of the fact that all three were embodied in the persons of Davison and his charming, sympathetic wife. Or the prospective heir to vast estates would forestall his inheritance by mortgaging his interest at Robson's estate office at a ruinous percentage, being advised thereto by his friend Davison. It was this complicated nature of his business which made Davison so nervous about employing the police. He didn't mind trusting us, but he gave the force more credit for bungling and preferred to lose the things, which, after all, were really his own, since they were not paid for, rather than risk exposure.